From the studios at Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters. The co-creator of the Emmy Award-winning series, How I Met Your Mother, is back, but this time with a novel. Carter Bays is joining us today to tell us more about his debut novel. It's called The Mutual Friend. Carter, good to have you on the program.
Hi, Gemma. Thank you for having me.
All right. So before we get to the book, we do need to talk about How I Met Your Mother, because this series ran for 9 years on CBS, won, I think, what, 10 Emmys? And you really had a cult-like following. And I have to say that I watched every season. So I would place myself in that. I don't know if I'm at that cultish level, but I definitely was a fan. How did you come up with the idea of How I Met Your Mother?
Wow, that's a good question. It's something that sort of came out of just our own myself and Craig Thomas, the other creator, our own experience. We were best friends who lived together for a while. I was single and he was married, and like the first one in our friend group to get married. So he was kind of like the one married guy, and the rest of us were single. And yeah, it was sort of based on our lives and based on our experiences living in New York. It wasn't anything more than that until we kind of had the idea of adding this How I Met Your Mother layer to it, where it's a story being told from the future. And which really sort of made it pop for us, and made, you know, it added this whole other element to the storytelling. I'm always interested in finding interesting ways to tell stories, and that sort of really connected with us.
Yeah, it was really just such a unique show, I think, because of that aspect. But did you have any sense that it would do as well as it did?
It's weird. This sounds crazy, but I kind of did. I don't know. I kind of felt like I sort of feel like you have to feel that way when you're working that hard on something. You have to feel like this is the greatest thing ever. And I was really proud of it. I just loved it so much. I loved the cast. I loved all the writers that we worked with. I mean, it was just such a talented bunch from top to bottom. Our director, Pam Fryman, our editor, Sue Fetterman, who won a bunch of Emmys. Like I just felt very lucky from start to finish to get to work with such talented people. And it just felt like in a just world, this show is going to be a hit because the people making it are just too nice and too talented. So yeah, I think I had like a bit of it was probably foolhardy, but I sort of really felt like this is something that's going to last.
Well, hey, you know, you were right on that premonition. So, you know, what's interesting too, is the program ran for 9 years, right? So you get 9 years to build and expand on these characters, because they weren't the same from the beginning from when the show wrapped up. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden, you know, the show wraps, then you decide to write a novel, and you have to contain all of these characters within a novel. I'm just curious about how that creativity is different.
It's very different, and I love both jobs. I love writing for television, and I love writing novels. And I feel like I want to spend the rest of my career like bouncing back and forth between them. But they are so different. Like the joy of writing television is, as I said, collaboration and getting to work with, especially if you've got like a really talented bunch of writers who are there, who are challenging you every day to up your game. Like there's nothing better than that feeling. The laughs and the camaraderie, nothing's better than that. Especially mm-hmm. when you compare it to writing a novel, which is so solitary. It's just me in a room with a laptop, and you know, I can't get up until I've written 1,000 words. It can be lonely, but I also love storytelling, and I found myself, especially after 20 years in Hollywood, like so much of writing for television is, you know, you write a script and it's you've written a story, but it's really a business plan that you present to someone to get them to give you money to turn it into a TV show. And I found myself like that writing scripts didn't feel satisfying in the way that like writing a just telling the story did, and what was really enjoyable about this process was just being able to have the absolute freedom to do this on my timeline, and knowing that when I get to the end of this book and I type the words "the end," it's finished and it's a book. And if no one publishes it, that's their concern. But I could, you know, go down to Kinko's and print it out and put it on my bookshelf, and I've done it. And I really especially for this story, because the story was so important to me, and I love this character, mm-hmm. Alice, and I was sort of had written the first chapter and wanted to see her journey reach its end, and so it was really it was kind of like I had to do it. I had to see her see how her story unfolds and see what happened.
Mm-hmm. So the book, The Mutual Friend, as you mentioned, it's about this character Alice, and it's set in 2015. So yeah, that seems like yesterday, but it's not. Tell us the premise of the book, because Alice is 28 and there's a lot going on in her life.
Yeah, and there's a lot going on in the book. It's definitely there's a big cast of characters, and it's a bit, it's got a lot of like it's a winding path, but ultimately the story, mm-hmm. is about Alice. She's 28 years old. She, like I think a lot of us, is struggling with this desire to just put her phone down and focus on getting something done in life. She for her, that something is becoming a doctor. She wants to be a doctor. She wants to go to medical school. And in order to do that, she has to take this test, the MCAT. And mm-hmm. she has one summer to study for this test. It's like the biggest test you've ever taken. It's an 8-hour ordeal. And she just has to study. And it's the story of her fighting through the distractions, and the distractions that I think we can all relate to, you know, start small. Like, you know, she wants to check Facebook and she wants to check Twitter. And it's hard in this day and age when so much of our lives take place on our phones to like put that down and focus on something that's not our phones. And then the distractions get bigger and the people in her life become distractions, and it's her grappling with, you know, at what cost do you pursue your dream? You know, mm-hmm. which I think a lot of people can relate to, and so it's full of all sorts of funny, ridiculous side trips and misadventures as she makes her way along the path towards her goal.
So, was there a specific moment in your own life where you came up with this idea to write the book? Because there really is, I think, this tug of war between, you know, quote, real life and quote, you know, your online or technology.
Yeah, there is.
Living your real life, you know?
Yeah, I've always been fascinated by that. I mean, the story that I tell is that there was a moment where I was talking to my sister. I was on a work trip. My sister worked with me at the time in Las Vegas, and we were on a casino floor walking to the hotel rooms or something like that. And mm-hmm. she was telling me some story, and it was like a bit of office gossip, or it might have been like some dating story from her life. I don't know, because I was on my phone and I was like paying attention to my phone. And she eventually scolded me and was like, "Hey, put your phone down. I'm trying to tell you a story here, and you're ignoring me to play on the internet. That's not cool. You know, focus on the real world and not what's in your phone." What she didn't know was that what was in my phone was an email I'd just gotten from my wife. With the subject line was, "Are you sitting down?" And it was a picture of a pregnancy test. And oh, I was geez. Finding out that I was going to be a dad in that moment. And it occurred to me that, like, wow, you know, this idea of like focus on real life, like, well, where is real life? Real life is, you know, the idea of where real life takes place has changed. I think a lot of our lives are lived inside our phones. You know, you, mm-hmm. People fall in love there now, and you maintain your friendships on your phone, and it just sort of made me think, like, is there a non-judgmental way to describe that and to question what that means? Because I feel like for better or for worse, this is what it's going to be like being a human being from here on in. So we better start adapting to it.
Well, I love that idea, though, right? Is there a non-judgmental way to look at this? Because, you know, it is something, you know, that I didn't grow up with, right? I mean, we didn't have cell phones when I was a kid. But as an adult, how it has become such an integral part of your life. I mean, first, it was kind of like, you know, work, right? Like we all had the internet at work, and then all of a sudden you get this phone, and now it, you know, and now we have smartphones, and it's been this progression. But I, you know, when I look at my kids, I mean, like I have a 14-year-old, and you know, and I mean, and especially during the pandemic, you know, this is how he connected with all of his friends. This is how they, I mean, you know, it's like they hung out together online. I mean, they were talking, they were gaming. And it's funny because I do the same thing, as you said, with your friends. I mean, I don't talk on the phone with my friends that often, but I sure do text a lot.
Yeah.
And it is just a part of our lives.
Yeah, it really is. And it's funny because I have kids, I have three kids also. And it really, it's funny how I started writing this before the pandemic, but the pandemic really threw out the rule book. It really was like, like, you know, at the time it was like, oh no, you got to have like in-person play dates and like, you can't just have them on their phone all the time. But like, yeah, that it becomes a lifeline when there's no other way to interact with your friends. I mean, we moved across the country during the pandemic and my daughter is still best friends with her best friend from New York because of FaceTime, you know, and they still have this great friendship that is fully formed. And you know, it's something that we're all kind of grappling with. I mean, my daughter is still young enough that we've kept her from getting a phone, but I can already tell that the pressure on the dam is building up and eventually she's going to get a phone and then it's all over, you know, but
I know it's downhill from there. Well, and that's the thing. Like, I mean, my youngest is 10 and it's, I mean, his play dates consist now of being on FaceTime with his buddies. And like, they all have like mini hoops, like basketball things in their bedrooms and they play mini hoop. And I'm like,
oh, that's great.
it is bizarre. Right. But at the same time, I wonder, and I know you said you wrote the book before the pandemic or started it, but I think in a way it's like, it's still human connection. And that's what I think, you know, in the book too, is human connection just quote in person, or is that human connection? I mean, are we, you know, finding those connections in technology as well?
Yeah. It's funny. I feel like a good exercise for any writer is to like really ask yourself, like, what is it about me and who I am at the particular moment of history that I live in that I have to talk about? And for me, I just feel like I'm just part of this lucky generation that has sort of lived on both sides of this huge turning point in human existence. You know, like I remember growing up with, you know, the only phone you had was the one on the wall in the kitchen. And
exactly.
And, you know, you would go out on a weekend night and not know who you're going to see because, you know, like maybe your friends are going to be at the coffee shop and maybe you'll run into them, but maybe you won't. It's like that is a world that our kids just will never know about. It'll never exist for them. I wanted to document that. I wanted to sort of like write something that acknowledges this huge shift that we've made as a species, which sounds so grandiose, but I think it is like, it's a big deal.
No, I think you're right though. I mean, and I think that the pandemic really kind of put that into focus, right? That so many of us, like Alice, even though the book was, you know, is based in 2015, this is where we live so much of our lives now. And it is part of the human existence. So it's almost like, do we continue to grapple with that idea of, well, we shouldn't be living in, you know, on our phones, or is it, do we incorporate being on our phones into our lives because it already is incorporated into our lives?
I think so. I think the future always arrives earlier than you think it is. And I remember as a kid, you know, the idea was like, oh, someday we'll be living in virtual reality. And, you know, like, you know, we'll be living inside our computers. And like, you know, you just ride the subway in New York and everyone's on their phone. It's like, we're already there. We're already living in the Matrix. It's not, you know, it maybe we're not all wearing, you know, the outfits from Tron and riding around on the speeder bikes. But like, it is... it's, you know, we are now living a significant portion of our lives inside this virtual realm. And I wanted to like really acknowledge that and tell a story and use that as a framework to tell this story.
Yeah. Well, I think you tell it beautifully. I mean, it's such a, It's such a well-written book and so many pieces and parts to it. So
thank you
so much for your time today and talking with us.
Oh my gosh, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. We've been talking with Carter Bays. He is the co-creator of the Emmy Award-winning series, How I Met Your Mother, about his brand new debut novel, The Mutual Friend. It is out now. Carter, again, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Gemma.
Absolutely. And I want to thank all of you for joining us today on Idaho Matters. We sure appreciate you. Our senior producer is Samantha Wright. Our associate producer is Hannah Gardosky. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you back here tomorrow.